This audio is produced and distributed by the Christian Biblical Church of God, Post Office Box 1442, Hollister, California, 95024-1442. For the Canadian office and offices overseas, listen at the end of the message to visit our website at .org. Last week I was talking to Gary Stashek about some of the things that he has written concerning preservation of the Old Testament. And he wrote that of all the kings of Israel, apparently David was the only one who followed the command found in Deuteronomy 17. So let's go read it. Deuteronomy 17. Now, I gave a sermon some time back showing that when Samuel was instructed by God to set up the covenant with Israel with a kingship, that he laid it up before the Lord. And as we're going to see, something was very important why he laid it up before the Lord. So we'll jump ahead just a little bit, but we'll come back to it. At the time that Samuel did that, the ark was not at the tabernacle. So he just laid it up before the Lord. Later then, it appears that it was added to Deuteronomy 17, probably by, it's possible, by David or Asaph. It's possible that it was by Hezekiah. We don't know for sure. But let's read it, Deuteronomy 17 and verse 14. See, because when they wanted a king, they still were not completely at rest with their enemies. So they weren't fully settled in the land. They weren't fully settled in the land until after David did all the conquering. So let's read it here, verse 14. When you are come into the land which the Lord your God gives you, and shall possess it, and shall dwell therein, and shall say, I will set up a king over me, like as all the nations that are about me. You shall in no wise set a king over you, except whom the Lord your God shall choose. One from among your brethren you shall set king over you. You shall not set a stranger over you, which is not your brother. Then he gives some warnings. Now, as we read this, I want you to think about Solomon, because he violated everything here. And as we will see, the reason that he probably did was because he didn't follow the later instructions a few verses down. But he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt. What's the first thing he did? He married a daughter of the Pharaoh of Egypt, see? To the end that he should multiply horses, for as much as the Lord has said unto him, you shall henceforth return no more that way. Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart be not lifted up, that his heart turn not away. Neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. Well, now, Solomon didn't multiply it to himself. God gave it to him because he started out with a right and proper and a real humble attitude, you see. And it shall be. Now, here's the key thing, and this is what we were talking about, Gary and I were talking about, verse 18. And it shall be, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book. So he was going to have his own personal copy of the law, which then is the five books of Moses. Out of that which is before the priest, the Levites. So he was to use a copy that the Levites had. And it shall be with him, He shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, to keep all the words of this law and these statutes to do them, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment to the right hand or to the left, to the end that he may prolong his days and his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. Now, when it came time to finalize everything, okay, and to go and to take this law, let's go back and let's see how this law developed, how it came about, so that he would appreciate and know. Let's come back here to Exodus 24. Exodus 24. Now, this is after the Ten Commandments were given. This is after all the statutes and judgments were given. And Moses wrote then what was the first part of what later became the book of the law, or the book of the covenant of the law of the Lord. Now, verse 3. And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord, and all the judgments, and all the people answered, said with one voice, all the words which the Lord has said we will do. Then they had special offerings. Then in verse 7, and he took the book of the covenant and read it in the audience of the people, and they said, all the Lord has said we will do and be obedient. As I brought out in the sermon, was Jesus married? This is part of the covenant marriage ceremony between the Lord God, who later became Jesus Christ, and Israel, the 12 tribes. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you concerning all these words. So then they said they would do it. God was pleased. Now verse 12. And the Lord said to Moses, come up to me in the mount and be there, and I will give you tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written that you may teach them. So the first set of the tables of stone was a table of stone that God himself selected, that God himself wrote on. Later we'll see, after he broke them, then he told Moses, now you bring up two more tables and I'll redo it. Now, let's come to Deuteronomy 31. Deuteronomy 31. Okay, Deuteronomy 31. And we will see where the law was kept. And this becomes a very important thing to understand. Okay? Deuteronomy 31, let's pick it up here in verse 24. Verse 24. And it came to pass, when Moses had made an end of writing the words of this law in a book. I see Deuteronomy is the second giving of the law. Deutero means two. Nomi means law. So this is Deuteronomy, the second giving of the law. Wrote the words of the law in a book until they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites that bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, saying, take this book of the law and put it in the side, or on the side of the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God. Now, on the side then were special sleeves that were attached to the ark so the scrolls could be put in there. And those contained the original writings of Moses. That's where they were put. And put there for safekeeping, so that they would always have the original law written by Moses, from which to what? make exact copies. Now let's read on. That it may be there for a witness against you. See, and that's, you know, even as Tyndale says, he says the way that you begin to evangelize sinners is preach Moses unto repentance. That is, preach the law, and you see, they've been lawbreakers, see. Then afterwards comes mercy and forgiveness when they repent, see. So it is a witness against them. Now notice verse 27. A true prophecy. For I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. Behold, while I am yet with you this day, you have been rebellious against the Lord. And boy, did they make his life miserable for 40 years. And how much more after my death? And did that not happen? Yes, indeed. So gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in your ears. So he stood up and he read everything that is in the book of Deuteronomy. And you go back to the first chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, and this was a long standing, wasn't it? To hear all of this, to listen to all of this? Yes. Deuteronomy 1 and verse 1. These be the words which Moses spoke to all Israel on this side of Jordan in the wilderness. The whole book of Deuteronomy to finish it off. Now notice what he does. And call heaven and earth to record against them. Same words of God, wasn't it? Set before you life and death, good and evil. Therefore choose life that you may live. Call heaven and earth. What did Jesus say about his words? The heaven and earth shall perish, but my word shall never pass away. Okay, same thing. Now, it was verse 29. For I know that after my death you will utterly corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you. And evil will befall you in the latter days. So here's a prophecy coming right down to our days. And is not Israel corrupting itself? Just like Moses said. Yes, it is. Because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands. And Moses spoke in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. And then here's the song. So he spoke all the words of Deuteronomy. When he got done with it, he gave them a final hymn, Deuteronomy 32. See? So this was an all-day service to get this done. So you know what happened. You know what happened. Now, let's come over here to chapter 32, chapter 32 and verse 44. Chapter 32 and verse 44. And Moses came and spoke all the words of this song in the ears of the people, he and Hosea, the son of Nun, and that is, another word for Joshua. And Moses made an end of speaking all these words to all Israel, and he said unto them, set your hearts unto all the words which I testify among you this day, which you shall command your children to observe to do all the words of this law. For it is not a vain thing for you, because it is your life, that they may live, and so forth. And then after that, the Lord came and said the same day, you get up on top of Mount Nebo, you're going to look at the land, and then you're going to die. And it's interesting that when he died, I think it is that the Septuagint brings out that God kissed him and he died. So that was rather a tender moment there. Now then, let's come over here to Joshua, the first chapter. We're going to see that in order to continue on with what was to be done, God was with Joshua just as he was with Moses. Now, verse 5, Joshua 1. And there shall not any man be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with you. I will not fail you, nor forsake you. Now, let's come here to Hebrews 13, because we have something very important. God is always consistent, Old Testament and New Testament. There is no contradiction whatsoever. Verse 5, Hebrews 13. Let your conduct be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he has said, I will never leave you, nor forsake you. And that means, no, I will not ever leave you, and I will never forsake you, because there are three negative words in the Greek there. So that's the same thing that he told Joshua, right? Okay. Now notice verse 8. Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever. Then we have other scriptures which say, you sons of Israel are not destroyed, because I, the Lord, change not. So here we have a very interesting thing with Joshua. Now let's come back to Joshua 1 and let's finish off what is said here. Okay. Now verse 6. Be strong and of a good courage. And that's what Jesus told the disciples just before he was arrested. He said, be courageous, I've overcome the world. Okay. For unto this people shall you divide for an inheritance the land which I swore unto your fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law. Now, why did he tell them he have to be very courageous in order to do all the law? Because there are always going to be the politicals that come to you who don't want to do it and try and get you to not do it. See? You know, like someone. Now notice how he was to do it, you see. According to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you, turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. And this book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth. So he had to have a copy of it himself, right? So he would know what was in it. But you shall meditate therein day and night. Now this sounds an awful lot like the command given to the king, doesn't it? That you may observe to do according to all that is written therein, for then shall you make your way prosperous, and then you shall have good success. See, those are the keys to success, the way of God. Verse 9, have I not commanded you, be strong and of good courage, be not afraid, neither be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now then, after they conquered the land, let's come to Joshua 24. Then something happened. Joshua 24 and verse 26. Joshua did something. He wrote something. Now here was an addition to the book of the law. A legal, proper addition to it, which Joshua did. Let's pick it up here in verse Do you forsake foreign gods and so forth? Verse 24, and the people said to Joshua, the Lord our God we will serve, and his voice we will obey. Have we heard that before? Yes, indeed. So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and set them a statute and an ordinance in Shechem. And Shechem later became, no, the tabernacle was at Shiloh. That's right. The tabernacle was taken to Shiloh. Where do we find that? Anyway, it's there. We won't go back and look at it there. Now notice what he did, verse 26. And Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God, and took a great stone and set it up there under an oak tree. Now this was going to be a memorial of what they did, the covenant that they made, that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. So that's right there where the tabernacle was. And Joshua said to all the people, behold, this stone shall be a witness unto you, for it has heard all the words of the Lord which he spoke unto us, and it shall be therefore a witness unto you, lest you defy your God, that is, go after other gods. And you know what happened after that. When Joshua died, and then the elders that were with him died, then the children of Israel did what? Same thing they always did. They said, boy, look at these other nations. Now they have some good things with their gods. So they worship Baal and Ashtaroth. And what happened? God had to send the Amorites and the Jezebites and so forth, send them off into captivity. God would raise up a judge, deliver them. They, as long as the judge was righteous, they would follow. Soon as he died, right back to the old hanky-panky they were up to doing every time. So that's the whole story of the book of Judges. Now let's come to the book of Samuel. Book of 1 Samuel. Now let's come to the book of 1 Samuel. It's interesting if you read the title there. The first book of Samuel, otherwise called the first book of the Kings. So instead of 1 and 2 Samuel, it was originally 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 3 Kings, 4 Kings. Okay? Now, the tabernacle was at Shiloh. And you know the story of Eli, who was the high priest, and his two corrupt sons, Hophni and Phinehas. And you know the story of Hannah, who came and prayed, and Eli made a great mistake and said, you're drunken. She said, no, my Lord, I'm not. I'm just pouring out my heart to God. Here I'm childless, and my husband has another wife, and she keeps flaunting her children in front of me, and I can't bear it any longer. So he said, God grant your wish. So Samuel was born, and she promised to donate him to God. Yeah, you find a lot of those, like Sarah and Haggai. Rebecca. Yeah. Okay. There's always this. Well, Jacob had triple trouble. He had two wives and two handmaids. And the argument always was when he was coming in out of the field, where is he going to stay tonight? Okay, so we have this human element in here too. Well, you know the story. Samuel was born, and she brought him to serve as an assistant to Eli. Now, you know the story that happened after the warning that God gave through Samuel to Eli and his sons. That is, they would all die in one day. So God accomplished it in a very interesting way. Now let's come over here. Let's see how that was done. 1 Samuel 4. 1 Samuel 4. And let's pick it up here in verse 3. And it's always the way, just like America today. What happens when there's war? What happened at 9/11? All of a sudden they remembered God. We've got to have God on our side. God bless America, wave flags, and all this sort of thing. Well, here's what we have here. They went out to battle against the Philistines, and the battle went really bad, and they slew the army in the field, about 4,000 men. Now here, 1 Samuel 4 and verse 3. And when the people were come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Now why has the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines?" Here's what we need to do. "Let us fetch the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that it may come among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies." See, now what was happening here was this. God told them, don't go to war unless I tell you to go to war. And when you go to war, you're to have the Ark of the Covenant go first. So they went back and say, well, we need God to save us from our enemies, so let's go back and we'll get the Ark of the Covenant. So the people sent to Shiloh that they may bring from there the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, which dwells between the cherubim. Now remember what was in the Ark. In it was what? Number one, the tables of stone. Number two, the rod of Aaron that budded to solve the problem as to whom did God choose. And number three, an omer of manna. What was on the side of the ark? The book of the law. So here they get it. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant. When the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so the earth rang again, and it was just vibrating. And when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, "What is this noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews?" And they understood that the Ark of the Lord was coming to the camp. So they were afraid and said, "God is come into the camp." And they said, "Woe unto us, for there has not been such a thing hitherto. Woe to us, who's going to deliver us?" And so forth. So they said, "Okay, be strong, quit yourself like men," verse 9, "you Philistines, that you be not servants unto the Hebrews, as they have been to you. Quit yourself like men and fight." In other words, like the British would say, "Have a stiff upper lip and go to it, old chap." Okay. So they fought. Israel was smitten. They fled every man to his tent. Very great slaughter. There fell 30,000 footmen, and the Ark of God was taken. Now, this was really quite a thing. Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons, were slain. Then a messenger ran back to tell Eli what had happened. When Eli heard this, being 98 years old, now, did Eli have plenty of time to change and make amends? Yes. But he didn't. And his eyes were dim that he could not see. And a man said to Eli, verse 16, "I am he that comes out of the army. I fled today out of the army." And he said, what is there done, my son?" And then he told him, "The Philistines have the ark." And he fell over backwards and hit his head on a big stone, and he died. Well, you've gone over the story many times. So what happened? The Philistines took it. They figured, boy, here's a big trophy of war. See. So what did they do? Now, God didn't get them right away. They put it in the temple of Dagon. And Dagon fell down before the ark. So they set him back up, and he fell down, broke his arms. Then all of a sudden, this mystery disease starts coming. Hemorrhoids. Incurable hemorrhoids. And to make it worse, mice everywhere. The country was overridden with them. So they called the priest. What are we going to do? So they said, well, what you need to do is get two goats that are young milking goats and take the kids away from them, build a new cart, make a peace offering. So they made a peace offering of five hemorrhoids and five mice. And, you know, that was before the days of Rite Aid. There was no Preparation H. So they said, send a peace offering. So they sent it off, and they said, okay, now release it at this road, and if it goes that way toward Israel, then that's fine. So here goes the ark. Now remember, separated from the tabernacle, and this becomes very, very important when we see where it eventually ended up and why David was involved. So it came to Kirjath-Jearim. Chapter 7, 1 Samuel, and verse 1. And the men of Kirjath-Jearim came and fetched up the ark of the Lord and brought it to the house of Abinadab in the hill and sanctified Eleazar his son to keep the ark of the Lord. So apparently these were Levites at Kirjath-Jearim. And it came to pass while the ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim that the time was long. Now it says for 20 years. I haven't worked out the chronology, but it is a period of time more than 20 years when you consider the reign of Saul for 40 years and then into the time of David. Now then, even with this, Samuel still dealt with the people and said, okay, if you'll obey him, so forth. Then we have the rejection of Samuel as prophet and as judge and the setting up of Saul as king. Now, you know what happened with Saul? He was rejected. David, a man after God's own heart, was chosen. Now, let's come to 1 Chronicles 13. Now, after David had been made king over Judah and over Israel, that was after 7 years of reigning over Judah, then they came and said, we want you to be king over all Israel. So David then, he wanted to bring back the ark to Jerusalem. So what he did? Now notice, the first time, he didn't do it right. He consulted with the captains of thousands and hundreds and with every leader, but not the Levites and the priest. And he said unto all the congregation of Israel, if it seems good to you, now what is the way of man? There is a way that seems right to a man, the ends thereof, the ways of death. So here we have a perfect example of this. What a good and honorable thing to bring back the ark of the Lord back to the Jerusalem. And so they said, okay, let's go do it. And with them the priests and Levites in their city. They said, let's bring again the ark of the God of our God to us. Verse 3, for we have not inquired at it in the days of Saul. So here all that time. Isn't it amazing how the people that God chose always neglected God? Isn't that amazing? It even runs true in the church too, doesn't it? So all the congregation said they would do it, for the thing was right in the eyes of all the people. So they went on down to get it, put it in a new cart, And the ark began to rock back and forth, so Uzzah reached out to steady it, and God struck him dead. And David was afraid and displeased, and so they left the ark, verse 14, 1 Chronicles 13, and the ark remained with the family of Obed-Edom in his house 3 months. Now, Obed-Edom, we're going to see a little later, we're going to see some very interesting things here in just a little bit. Now then, let's come to chapter 15. David learned a lesson. That cost Uzzah his life. And I imagine at the second resurrection, he's going to ask David, why did you do this? Okay. So, 1 Chronicles 15 and verse 2. Then David said, none ought to carry the ark of God but the Levites. For them as the Lord chosen to carry the ark and to minister unto him. So then he got them all together, charged the Levites and so forth, that they would go down and they would get the ark and they would bring it back. And he says, verse 13, because you did it not right at first, the Lord your God made a breach upon us, for that we sought him not after the due order. So then they brought it. David was all happy and excited. Now, come to chapter 16 and verse 39. 1 Chronicles 16 and verse 39. And Zadok the priest and his brethren the priests before the tabernacle of the Lord in the high place that was at Gibeon. Now, he didn't bring the ark back to the tabernacle. That becomes an important thing in relationship to why David was perhaps the only king to write himself a copy of the law of God, and we'll see that evidence in some of the Psalms, because there are some tremendous Psalms. Okay, let's come back to the first part of 1 Chronicles 16. Verse 1, so they brought the ark of the Lord, this is the Levites here, and set it in the midst of the tent that David had pitched for it. So he made a special tabernacle, kind of like this, 1 Chronicles 16 and verse 1, kind of like a special Holy of Holies. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before God. So what they apparently did, because the altar was up at Gibeon. So what they did, they probably made altars of 12 stones. Remember the command that if you're going to build an altar unto the Lord to offer an offering on it, you're not going to set a tool to it to cut it. You shall make it of 12 stones, and then you can offer. So apparently they did, right next to David's house. And when David had made an end of offering peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord. He dealt to every one of Israel, both man and woman, to every one a loaf of bread and a good piece of flesh and a flagon of wine, and he sent them on their way. Now notice verse 4, because this becomes a very important thing. And he appointed certain of the Levites to minister before the ark of the Lord to record, to give thanks and praise the Lord God of Israel. Notice the first one, Asaph, the chief. And we're going to see that Asaph was the one who wrote quite a few psalms. And we're going to see some very interesting things about Asaph. And next to him was Zechariah and all the rest going down the line, and even Obed-Edom was there and so forth. And on that day, David delivered first this psalm. So it was in a psalm and praise to God that he was able to have it there. Now, this established a special relationship between David and God. A special relationship. And apparently this is where David would go out and he would pray every day. Can you imagine this? Coming out there and praying before the Ark of the Covenant of God. Now the Levites could go in and minister unto it. Now we're going to see here in just a little bit how this affected what David wrote and how he did it. Okay? Now, let's come to 2 Samuel, the 7th chapter. 2 Samuel 7, this is a parallel account there in 1 Chronicles 16. Oh, by the way, First and Second Chronicles were supposed to be the last two books of the Old Testament in their original order. Now, this had a profound effect upon David. Now, can you imagine being able to have a place to pray, to sing to God, to write psalms? And remember, a lot of the psalms that he wrote, the Psalm of David, which he gave to who? Asaph. And Asaph was the one who was in charge of the special tabernacle. Now, let's come here to 2 Samuel 7 and verse 1. And it came to pass, when the king sat in his house, and the Lord had given him rest round about from all of his enemies. Now, when you're not out fighting battles, and you're living in your own house, and you can go pray every day before the sanctuary of God, you're going to develop a tremendous relationship between you and God. And he was prophesied to be a man after God's heart. And of course, all the psalms attest to it. We'll look at some of those psalms here in just a minute. And the king said unto Nathan the prophet, "See now, I dwell in a house of cedar, but the ark of God dwells within curtains." So apparently, even with this tent, he could pull back the flap and look through the curtains, and he could see the Ark of the Covenant. Now that would be a tremendous, tremendous thing, wouldn't it, huh? Now then, let's understand something important. And then he wanted to build the house, and no, you couldn't build the house, but your son will build it, and so forth. Let's come to Psalm 63.